Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, reading articles from the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, August 7th, 2022. We'll begin with articles from the local news sections, and then we'll wrap up with articles from the local sports section. New YMCA preschool in San Angelo, no longer building Y-Town. By Rosanna Frere, published August 9th. For the past few years, the YMCA has been hard at work expanding its operations in San Angelo. The new preschool program will be offered at 2833 College Hills Boulevard, former home of the Second Baptist Church. The facility is about a month away from getting a certificate of occupancy, and then we'll work on licensing, according to the preschool director, Gidget Tate. The hopeful finish date is before the end of 2022, Tate said. However, the new location will no longer accommodate the initially planned Y-Town. The plan was for multiple rooms in the new center to resemble different businesses, similar to a children's museum. Early on, shortly after COVID hit, that changed, Tate said. We went with strictly the Child Development Center, where we are able to move all of our child care facility over to that location. There will be a gym still, a basketball court, playground, and more. As for the preschool, online registration is open at ymcasanangelo.org. The former church building is expected to be able to accommodate 96 children ages 3 to 5. The cost is $120 a week for members and $135 for non-members. For anyone wishing to donate to the YMCA and its expansion projects, donations can be made on the organization's website. PACT Act expands VA health care and benefits for veterans, by Luis Martinez, special to the Standard Times, published August 5th. My name is Luis Martinez. I am the commander of Disabled American Veterans. Chapter 237 here in San Angelo, as well as the third junior vice commander for the DAV Department of Texas. I am also the veteran resource and referral specialist for the Texas Veteran Leadership Program, and I cover the Concho Valley and the Permian Basin. We are honored at the opportunity to bring you news concerning veterans and events that will be happening in our community. We will start with the PACT Act that was just passed. The PACT Act is a new law that expands VA health care and benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxic substances. This law helps the VA provide generations of veterans and their survivors with the care and benefits they've earned and deserve. The PACT Act is perhaps the largest health care and benefit expansion in VA history. The full name of the law is the Sergeant First Class Health Heath Robinson Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act. The PACT Act will bring these changes. Expands and extends eligibility for VA health care for veterans with toxic exposures and veterans of the Vietnam, Gulf War, and post-9/11 eras. Adds more than 20 new presumptive conditions for burn pits and other toxic exposures. Adds more presumptive exposure locations for Agent Orange and radiation. Requires VA to provide a toxic exposure screening to every veteran enrolled in VA healthcare. Helps us improve research, staff education, and treatment related to toxic exposures. If you have a presumptive condition, you don't need to prove that your service caused the condition. You only need to meet the service requirements for the presumption. Gulf War and post-9/11 veterans. More than 20 burn pit and other toxic exposure presumptive conditions were added based on the PACT Act. This change expands benefits for Gulf War era and post-9/11 veterans. These cancers are now presumptive. Brain cancer, gastrointestinal cancer of any type, glioblastoma, head cancer of any type, kidney cancer, lymphatic cancer of any type, lymphoma of any type, melanoma, neck cancer, pancreatic cancer, reproductive cancer of any type, respiratory, breathing-related cancer of any type. These illnesses are now presumptive. asthma that was diagnosed after service, chronic bronchitis, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, chronic rhinitis, chronic sinusitis, constrictive bronchiectasis or obliterative bronchiolitis, emphysema, granulomatous disease, interstitial lung disease, ILD, pleuritis, pulmonary fibrosis, sarcoidosis. Vietnam-era veterans. Based on the PACT Act, two new Agent Orange presumptive conditions were added. High blood pressure, also called hypertension. Monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, MGUS. Five new locations were added to the list of presumptive locations. Any U.S. or Royal Thai military base in Thailand from January 9, 1962 through June 30, 1976. Laos from December 1, 1965 through September 30, 1969. Cambodia at Mymot or Krek, Kampong Cham Province from April 16, 1969 through April 30, 1969. Guam or American Samoa or in the territorial waters off of Guam or American Samoa from January 9, 1962 through July 30, 1980. Johnston Atoll or on a ship that called at Johnston Atoll from January 1, 1972 through September 30, 1977. If you served on active duty in any of these locations, the VA will automatically assume or presume that you had exposure to Agent Orange. New radiation presumptive locations added. Cleanup of Aniwetok Atoll from January 1, 1977 through December 31, 1980. Cleanup of the Air Force B-52 bomber carrying nuclear weapons off the coast of Palomares, Spain from January 17, 1966 through March 31, 1967. Response to the fire on board an Air Force B-52 bomber carrying nuclear weapons near Thule Air Force Base in Greenland from January 21, 1968 to September 25, 1968. If you have been denied or need a file for new conditions, please call the DAV located in the San Angelo VA Clinic at 325-513-3387 or the Veteran County Service Officer located in the Cactus Hotel at 325-277-2956. Veteran events and programs for August. Daily DAV Food Pantry. Phone 325-513-3387. DAV Service Dog Program. Weekdays DAV Claims Assistance. 0800 to 1700 hours. Phone 325-513-3387. Thursdays, DAV PTSD Support Group, 1800 to 1900 hours at 202 Henry O. Flipper Street, room 103, phone 325-513-3387. August 16th, All Veterans Council of Tom Green County Meeting, 1700 at 125 South Browning Street. August 20th, Disabled American Veteran Chapter 237 Meeting, 1130 hours at 125 South Browning Street. August 20th, Elks Lodge Veteran and First Responder Free Breakfast, 0700 to 0900 hours, 2121 South Chadburn Street. August 25th, DAV Dine and Learn, Learn about the VA Mission Act, Free Food, 1700 hours at 125 South Browning Street. Phone 325-513-3387. Save the date, November 5th annual Veterans Day Parade and inaugural Veterans Awards Ball. Former San Angelo Police Chief Tim Vasquez sentenced to prison, from staff reports published August 5th. Former San Angelo Chief of Police Tim Vasquez was sentenced to 15 and a half years in prison and ordered to pay a $35,000 fine Friday, August 5th, for accepting bribes while leading the San Angelo Police Department. Law enforcement officers, particularly those in leadership positions, should be bastions of integrity. By accepting bribes, Mr. Vasquez defiled his badge, said U.S. Attorney Chad Meacham, following the verdict at the O.C. Fisher Federal Building in San Angelo. The Justice Department is determined to root out public corruption wherever we find it. Our citizens deserve honest public servants. Mr. Vasquez will now be held accountable for using his official position for financial gain at the expense of the residents of San Angelo. Each act of greed and dishonor affected fundamental aspects of the government processes and procedures that were designed to benefit the people they serve, said Dallas FBI Special Agent in Charge Matthew J. DiSarno. Our communities should not have to question the integrity and trust of public officials, and today's verdict is a step in restoring that confidence. According to evidence presented at trial, Vasquez used his official position to help Daly & Wells Communications Incorporated, a radio system vendor, land a $5.7 million contract with the city of San Angelo. In return, Daly & Wells and its affiliates funneled Vasquez and his band, Funky Monkey, more than $175,000. Daly & Wells and its affiliates also provided him tickets for luxury suites at Dallas Cowboys and San Antonio Spurs games, tickets for a luxury suite at a Journey concert, and free use of a luxury condominium at Azteca Condos in San Antonio. Vasquez never disclosed to the city of San Angelo or the city council that he had a business relationship with Daly & Wells. The Texas Local Government Code, the City of San Angelo Employee Manual, and the San Angelo Purchasing Policy Manual all required Vasquez to disclose that information. In February 2007, the City of San Angelo solicited bids for a new radio system for first responders, including the police department. In April, a committee recommended the city award the $5.6 million contract to Daly & Wells, which was eventually selected for the contract. 3 months later, in July, Juniper Valley LP, an affiliate of Daly & Wells, cut a $10,000 check to Funky Monkey Band. Vasquez deposited the funds into his personal checking account. For the next 8 years, Vasquez received yearly payments of approximately $8,000 from Daly & Wells or its affiliates, Buster & Buddy and Trixie & Finney, either made out to Vasquez or his band. Testimony at trial revealed that Funky Monkey's average fee to play at an event was about $2,000. By June 2, 2015, Vasquez and Funky Monkey had collected more than $84,000. In 2014 and 15, Daly & Wells contacted the city of San Angelo about updating its radio system from a proprietary EDACS EDAX system, which was in the process of being phased out, to a P25 Phase 2 system. When the city's IT manager told Vasquez of the estimated cost of $6 million and that it would have to go through a bidding process, Vasquez suggested that the IT manager use a public safety exception to avoid the bidding process, and the IT manager agreed. Ultimately, a purchasing cooperative was used to purchase the Daly & Wells system. Vasquez contacted a member of the San Angelo City Council and lobbied her to place the Daly & Wells contract on the City Council's agenda. Vasquez then advocated for the Daly & Wells contract before the City Council on December 16, 2014 and on June 2, 2015. Six people who were members of the City Council at the time testified that Vasquez had significant influence with the City Council and that it relied upon his advice in public safety matters. All six stated they did not know Vasquez had a business relationship with Daly & Wells before the vote on June 2, 2015. Five of those former City Council members testified they would have voted against awarding the contract to Daly & Wells if they were aware of the relationship. Two of the former city council members stated they would have disqualified Daley and Wells from being a radio vendor to the city if they knew of the payments to Vasquez and Funky Monkey. Following a presentation made by Vasquez and another city employee, a new $5.7 million contract was awarded to Daley and Wells in late 2015. In November 2016, Vasquez became aware that he was under investigation for the radio contract with Daley and Wells. About a month later, Daley and Wells wrote a $50,000 retainer check to Funky Monkey, noting Timothy R. Vasquez in the check's memo section. A few days later, Vasquez endorsed the $50,000 check and deposited the entire amount into his personal bank account. In total, Vasquez, through Funky Monkey, received at least $175,000 from Daley and Wells and its affiliates. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office, and the Texas Rangers conducted the investigation with the cooperation of the San Angelo Police Department and the City of San Angelo. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Jeff Hagg, Sean Long, and Juanita Fielden are prosecuting the case. Angelo State University joins Southwest Airlines Pilot Recruitment Program by Tom Neary, special to the Standard Times, published August 3rd. Angelo State University and Southwest Airlines have announced ASU as a university partner in the airline's Destination 225 Pilot Recruitment Program, which will provide ASU commercial aviation students a defined pathway to become competitively qualified for career opportunities with Southwest Airlines. On a compass, 225 is the Southwest directional heading, and the Destination 225 program was developed to lead aspiring pilots to Southwest Airlines. ASU is the sixth university partner to join the program since its inception in 2019. ASU President Ronnie Hawkins Jr. and the Vice President of Flight Operations for Southwest Airlines, Lee Kennebrew, announced the partnership agreement on Wednesday, August 3rd on the ASU campus. We are honored for Angelo State to partner with Southwest Airlines Destination 225 program, Hawkins said. As a Hispanic-serving institution, we recognize the opportunity a partnership like this presents for all our students to become pilots and aviation professionals, but especially minorities and women who are underrepresented in both the commercial and military aviation industry. This is another great step in achieving both our vision and the mission at Angelo State of being an innovative leader in initiatives that provide graduates who are competitive on a global stage. We're thrilled to welcome Angelo State University as a partner in Southwest's Destination 225 program, Kennebrew said. We continue our work of opening career pathways for the next generation of professional pilots, and we look forward to supporting students as they train, gain flight experience, and develop into competitively qualified Southwest first officer candidates in the years ahead. As early as their sophomore year, ASU students in the Bachelor of Commercial Aviation, BAC, Flight Operations degree program will be able to apply for Destination 225. If they are accepted and fulfill all the requirements, upon graduating from ASU, they will enter a career pathway towards Southwest Airlines that includes acting as ASU flight instructors for the year following their graduation. Upon completing the flight instruction time, eligibility to be hired at one of the Southwest Airlines partner carriers. After building flight experience at the partner carrier, consideration for pilot positions at Southwest Airlines. The candidate students will also receive ongoing mentorship from a Southwest Airlines pilot during their time at ASU and with the partner carrier. Southwest Airlines is honored that Angelo State University is the newest academic partner in our Destination 225 program, said Juan Suarez, Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Southwest Airlines. We're hopeful this partnership will provide aspiring commercial pilots at this notably Hispanic-serving institution a defined career path in aviation, along with the confidence of knowing that they are welcome in our Southwest Airlines family. ASU launched its Bachelor of Commercial Aviation program in the fall of 2021 semester. There are currently 25 students in the first flight operations class, with 50 new students expected to join the program this fall. Pilot training is led by certified flight instructors using a fleet of 12 aircraft and three state-of-the-art simulators provided by Skyline Aviation, which is owned by ASU alumni. More details about Destination 225 and its training and flying partners are available at careers.southwestair.com/D225. For more information about ASU's commercial aviation program, go to angelo.edu/commercial-aviation. Governor Abbott praises state's business success at West Texas Legislative Summit, by Charles Bryce, published August 4th. Texas Governor Greg Abbott lauded the success of Texas when he spoke at the 18th annual West Texas Legislative Summit on Thursday morning at Angelo State University. Abbott said Texas has been leading the way in business for years, and the state is again creating jobs and increasing oil production to help lower gas prices. The fact of the matter is there is no state in the United States of America that is doing as well on the issue of jobs as the great state of Texas, Abbott said to a standing room only crowd at ASU's C.J. Davidson Center. And the point here is that the West Texas businesses, they are an essential component of this incredible Texas economic juggernaut. Let me give you some facts and figures to back up what I said. The CEOs who run businesses have named Texas the number one state for doing business for 18 years in a row. Businesses in our state have contributed to make Texas the number one exporting state in America for 20 years in a row. Abbott went on to say that Texas has won the Governor's Cup, awarded to the state with the most qualified capital investment projects, every year that he's been in office. The governor said that for the first time in Texas, the state is now home to more Fortune 500 headquarters than any other state in the country. Now, it would be easy to say, that's great, but what does that have to do with San Angelo? Abbott said. Because as far as I know, there are no Fortune 500 companies that are headquartered in San Angelo. The fact of the matter is, most of the businesses in San Angelo and most of the businesses in West Texas would be categorized as small businesses. The fact is, about 90% of all businesses in the state are small businesses, and they employ about half or more of all the employees in our great state. So with that context in mind, I'm also proud to tell you that Texas ranks as the number one state in America to start a small business. Abbott noted that Allen's Transport recently announced it is moving its headquarters to San Angelo. The governor says Texas is doing its part to increase oil production and decrease the need to export natural energy from other countries. Abbott also addressed the border crisis, saying that every town in Texas and America is a border town. He said that 2 years ago, Texas had the lowest number of border crossings among border states, and now it's the highest, with immigrants coming from some 150 countries. The governor noted that 50 criminals on the terrorist watch list have been apprehended in Texas. Abbott said the Biden administration does not know how many more criminals on the terrorist watch list have come into the country. No state in the history of the United States has done more than what Texas is doing to secure the border, Abbott said. One of his closing comments was that Texas is in his blood. Abbott's father was from the tiny town of Rule, about 60 miles north of Abilene, and the governor was born in Wichita Falls. West Texas is just as important as any part of the state, Abbott said. Other speakers Thursday included Congressman August Pfluger from San Angelo. He moderated a discussion entitled Building a Foundation for the Future, Internet, Interstates, and Infrastructure. Senator Charles Perry moderated a discussion on growing future water supply, pipes, produced water, and drought. While Representative Drew Darby moderated Achieving Energy Independence, a West Texas Energy Gold Mine. And now sports. San Angelo Central Bobcats eyeing turnaround, by Charles Bryce, published August 9th. Heading into year two of the Kevin Crane era, The San Angelo Central High School football team is hoping to put the pieces together for a memorable season that might surprise a lot of people. Central finished 4-7 overall and 2-4 in District 2-6A in Crane's first season as head coach last year, after a long tenure as offensive coordinator under former head coach Brent Davis. The Bobcats have 6 returning starters on offense, including senior quarterback Tyler Hill, and a solid group of receivers. Defensively, Central will have 7 new faces in the starting lineup. The Bobcats open preseason workouts bright and early Monday morning at San Angelo Stadium. Overall, it was a good first day, Crane said. The kids showed up early and ready to go, and there was a lot of excitement in the air to start the season. We're excited and hopeful. We've got a good group, and we've got a lot of seniors coming back. Some of them played a lot of football last year, so that's a good thing. We do have some new faces as well, and so we've got to get those guys up to speed and get them ready to play on a Friday night. So every day, the idea is just to show up with a good attitude and work to improve every day. And if we can do those things, then hopefully we'll be where we want to be. Central will open the season on the road against Colleen Shoemaker on August 26th. The district opener is scheduled for October 7th at Midland High. In Hill's first season as the Bobcats' starting QB, he threw for 1,962 yards, 10 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions in 2021. He was Central's leading rusher with 102 carries for 820 yards and 10 scores. Crane says the 6'2", 185-pound dual-threat QB needs to take his game up a level in 2022. Yeah, absolutely, Crane said. He's going to have to, if we're going to have the kind of season we want to. Last year, he did some good things, but he wasn't consistent enough. We've talked a lot about it, and he's had a good summer. We qualified for state in 7-on-7, and you can't do that without good quarterback play, so that's promising. He's gone to several camps this summer and worked hard. I think that he's going to have a really good senior campaign. We're excited to see how he progresses throughout the season. Hill is expecting the Bobcats to have their claws out in 2022. Honestly, as a team, I feel like we're going to be a lot better this season, the second-year starter said. We have a lot of people coming back, and the run that we made as far as 7-on-7 goes, and I feel like even spring ball showed a lot too. Going back to 7-on-7, we made it to state and made it to the championship bracket for the first time in a while, actually. So I feel like it was a big confidence booster for us. And so for me, and I've talked to other teammates as well, we feel like this year is going to go a lot better. As always, the Bobcats' success on offense will depend greatly on the passing game, and Hill says he's got a lot of talented targets. I think it's great, the Bobcats' QB said of his receiving core. Our whole receiving core is coming back, with the exception of one of our slots. We have Jacob English coming back, Kevon Rice, and Jaden Gibson. And we'll have Ben Eimler or Cedric Fuentes playing on that left slot receiver. And both of those guys have potential of doing great things this season. So I feel like our receiving core has a lot of potential this season. It's a great thing for us, knowing that we're a team that throws the ball a lot. Fellow senior Ben Eimler is a solid backup QB who the Bobcats plan to have on the field as much as possible. He had to finish things up in a first-round playoff exit last year. Eimler's a good player, and obviously he stepped in for us some last year, Crane said. He's a smart kid and kind of a dual-role guy for us, a double-dipper, where he plays quarterback, but he also plays some receiver for us. We might even play him some at tight end. He's real versatile and can do several different things. The Bobcats' running game will likely be a work in progress as Tyree Brawley, Javion Robinson, and some others try to take some of the heat off Hill. On the other side of the ball, Crane isn't too worried about how the Bobcats will hold up their end of the bargain. We do have some new faces on defense, but I really feel good about our defense, Crane said. They had a good spring and they had a good summer. Moving Darius Floyd over to linebacker, I think, is going to be a big help. He's going to be kind of the leader there in the middle. Both of our safeties have some experience, and we've got some cornerbacks with some experience with Jacoby Yates. Up front, D-line-wise, we are going to have a lot of new faces. Those guys have to get up to speed. The Bobcats coach expects the offense to put up some points, but I also expect our defense to have a good year as well. Crane talked about the strength of the non-district schedule. We've had a lot of good teams on the docket, he said. We open up with Shoemaker, and we've got to go to Killeen, and that's always a tough road game. It's hard to win over there. They've got the best of us the last two times we've been over there. We hope to change those fortunes. El Paso Montwood's coming here. They've got a good team, and I've got a lot of respect for those guys. Abilene Cooper is obviously a really good team and a really good program. We've got to go to Abilene to play them, and then Belton and Abilene Wiley. It's a good non-district schedule, and we're looking forward to the challenge. Texas Football Magazine has projected Central to finish fourth in district behind Midland Legacy, Odessa Permian, and Friendship. Midland High and Odessa High are picked fifth and sixth, respectively. We can't worry about that, Crane said. What we have to worry about is the things that we can control, and we talk to our kids a lot about that. What we can control is showing up, working hard, being tough, and being disciplined. If we can control those things, everything else will take care of itself. Crane says it's always a tough district and is certainly a lot of fun to play against those longtime rivals in the Little Southwest Conference. We've got great coaches in this district, and we've got great players, Crane said. And so from top to bottom, it's a really good district. Obviously, Midland Legacy's been on a roll. They've been really good, and I think they'll be a really good team again. Permian is obviously a good program and a good team. We were right up there for several years, and our goal is to get back there. We're fighting every day to get back there and to be on top of our district. Hill said, being picked to finish fourth should light a fire under us. For Crane, personally, he's a little more settled in now with one season under his belt as head coach and campus athletic director. But he says, things come across his desk every day that he's not expecting. Somebody told me a long time ago that as a head coach, you're going to get a lot of things come across your desk you're not ready for, Crane said. But I think, like anything, you get more used to it and more comfortable the longer you do something. I'm living out my dream. I've always wanted to be a head coach, and to be a head coach at Central is really a dream come true for me. Every day I wake up, it's like I'm living out my dream. It's a lot of fun. We've got a great coaching staff and a lot of new faces and really good kids that we're fortunate to work with. Central has six new assistant coaches, including offensive coordinator Caden Coots, a former Pampa assistant, who will replace Logan O'Brien. O'Brien was hired at Grapevine. Menard Yellow Jackets ready to run in first year of six-man football by Mike Whitson, special to the Standard Times, published August 9th. Finley Field has seen quite a bit since it first opened for play back in 1934. In its 88th season, however, the historic Menard High School football stadium will see something it never has, the Yellow Jackets playing six-man football. Menard, which has remained playing at the 11-man level despite declining enrollment, makes the transition to six-man football in 2022. The Yellow Jackets join Erien County, Robert Lee, Eden, and Very Best in District 13 1A Division 1. Menard has been in a really tough spot playing 11-man for a long time now. They've been playing some really tough teams and just have not had the numbers to compete with the Cristovals and El Dorados and Masons, said first-year head coach Bryson Oliver, who was head to lead the program into six-man football. The community has been ready for six-man. It's just been a matter of finding the right time and the right person, and it was pretty surreal that the right person ended up being me. Oliver, an all-state quarterback that led Throckmorton to a state championship in 2012, says all the adjustments to Finley Field for the six-man game have been completed, including swapping goalposts with Water Valley, which is going to 11-man. The new coach thinks the old stadium is the perfect setting for Friday nights. I absolutely love this football stadium, said Oliver. It's got an old Coliseum-type feel to it with the home stands. It's carved out of a little mountain here at the top of Menard. It's a pretty incredible field even for 11-man, but in terms of 6-man and the fields I've been around, this is one of the coolest settings I've ever seen. Leading the Yellow Jackets into the six-man game is senior running back Joel Guerrero, an All-West Texas selection that rushed for 1,700 yards and 17 touchdowns last season. He also made 75 tackles on defense with 2 interceptions and 6 pass breakups. "I've been around a lot of good players," said Oliver. "Joel Guerrero is going to be right up there in terms of just pure athletic running backs that I've been around. I think he's going to shock some people around the state, and I think he's one of the better running backs in our district and probably in our region." Joining Guerrero in the backfield will be Jacob Guerrero, a transfer from Water Valley, who Oliver says is just a step behind Joel. "Those two guys in the backfield are pretty dynamic," he said. "They're going to give people a lot of trouble." Isaiah Stanislawski, a 6'3" all-district tight end from last season, is expected to be a part of the offensive attack as well. "I don't know too many people that are going to be able to cover him one-on-one," Oliver said. "He's going to give people some problems, too." Roy Brown, who served as team manager last year, was urged by his teammates to play his senior season. It didn't take long for Oliver to see why. "He's a natural leader, very vocal, and throws a really good ball," said Oliver. "He controls the huddle, he controls the offense, and does what I need him to do. He's going to be a really good senior leader for us." Oliver says offensively, Menard will mostly run out of a balanced T and unbalanced J-bird formation, similar to what he ran very successfully at Throckmorton, averaging more than 66 points per game. "We keep it pretty simple. We don't get crazy with anything we do. We like to get creative within the simple formations," he said. "We will do a lot of different things where we spread some guys out or get in a gun formation and spread things out, but the base of our offense will be one of those two formations." The Yellow Jackets will run a 4-2 defense led by the Guerreros as safeties and Stanislawski at defensive end. "Defensively, I think we're a little further ahead," said Oliver. "We're going to be beyond physical compared to some of my teams at Throckmorton. I think our defense is going to be more on the stronger side." Menard will be tested early in its non-district slate, including a trip to number 5 ranked Garden City and a home game versus San Marcos Academy, a TAP state finalist. "We have our schedule set up where we're going to find out how good we are pretty quick," said Oliver. "We need to be tested early so we can battle it out with our district. But I think we have the athletes where we can compete. I definitely think we can compete with our district, and I believe a playoff run is a realistic goal for us." Ozona Lions hope to create winning formula in 2022 by Amy McDaniel, published August 9th. Ozona. Going into their third vastly different district in 3 years, of UIL biennial alignments, and with more juniors on the roster than seniors, the Ozona High School football team is facing a lot of unknown in 2022. One thing the Lions believe they can count on is each other. "They begged all summer," said third-year head coach Jared Taylor, who created a player poll after many requests for a midnight practice to open two-a-days this year. "It was unanimous. They weren't messing around." The Lions, playing for a school a little more than an hour's drive southwest of San Angelo, has been aligned in the recent past into districts with a mix of far-flung teams from Mason and Johnson City to Holly and Stamford. For the next 2 years, anyway, the Lions will play a true West Texas mix of Sonora, Reagan County, Cristobal, and Forsan for District 3-2A Division I play. Anthony, in far West Texas, is a third 3A move down in the new district. "It's kind of a hodgepodge," said Taylor, an Ozona native himself. "It was pretty much what we were expecting once we knew we were going to be in 2A. I don't know what it all looks like on paper. We don't look great on paper right now, but we're okay with that." Returning just 3 starters from last year's team that notched a 5-6 record and fell in the first round of the playoffs, Ozona hasn't turned any heads for preseason predictors, but the coaches and players alike view the vacuum as a place to build a true team. "We want to focus on improving the team," said junior linebacker Rigo Trito, who was an all-district selection last year and part of a regional champion relay team in the spring. We want a district championship, but also for our team as a whole to get better. We have a lot of chemistry. Trito and fellow juniors Dusty Smith and Robert Barrera led the core class of the Ozona program, one that Taylor started coaching when they were freshmen in 2020. There's a bit of a different atmosphere this year compared to the last two, the coach said. They've been really excited, but really good friends with each other. And that's always a big benefit when they just genuinely like each other. They seem to play harder for each other. I've seen it from the summer and to our practices right now. They're here to play for each other. This is the first year in a while where the juniors outnumbered the seniors, but it's also the first year where we have a group of kids who all have the same mindset, said Smith, who is expected to be a playmaker on both sides of the ball after losing part of last season to injury. Smith was also part of the Lions state qualifying relay, along with Trito. We're so young, but we've had a lot of opportunities to get to know each other and to get that chemistry there, Trito added. In addition to Trito and Smith, Ozona will lean on sophomore Michael Daniels, said Taylor, who called them Ozona's three-headed monster at the skill positions. Trito, a 5'9", 170-pound linebacker who logged 110 tackles, 13 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles last year, along with Smith and Daniels, could be used in a variety of ways in the offensive backfield, or perhaps as pass-catching options. All have good speed. Along the line, Barrera was an all-district performer last year, in addition to Michael Luna, a senior. Other returners include sophomore quarterback Hudson Fowler, 6'4", 190 pounds. Seniors Logan Thompson and Max Everett, and juniors Matthew Daniels, Josh Camarello, and Bernie Blanco. For the first time since Taylor stepped on campus, the football players, about 50, in the boys' athletics program outnumber the group of athletes, about 30, who do not play football. Having the bodies out there has been great, honestly, said the coach, who pointed out that of 80 male athletes at Ozona, only 38 were in the football program when he arrived. That just didn't sit well with me, not in small-town West Texas. I think the biggest thing is finding out who our players are and getting them in the right positions, Taylor said. I think it will take a few games before it really gets worked out, and we've got everybody exactly where we need them to bring success. The excitement of the juniors led to the first midnight practice since Taylor arrived, and there were fans and bells and whistles and booming stereos at Lions Stadium to open football season in the wee hours of August 1st. They're looking forward to playing Sonora and Reagan County in district games, not simply rivalry games along neighboring towns. We've seen them. We know what they're capable of, Trito said. The hype's going to be real for those games. Smith said the team is looking forward to the challenge. It's more challenging, but at the same time, it's kind of fun, he said. We're kind of going in as underdogs, and nobody is expecting much of us. But I think if we can get out there and prove everybody wrong, it would be really cool. Sterling City, an intriguing unknown as it makes move to 11-man football. By Mike Whitson, special to the Standard Times, published August 8th. There are a lot of uncertainties surrounding the Sterling City High School football team, which makes the transition from a 6-man title contender to an 11-man newcomer for the 2022 season. But according to head coach Trey Sisko, one thing will always be certain. Football is football, said Sisko, entering his 18th season with the Eagles, 7th as head coach. It's still blocking and tackling and putting athletes in space. I think we can still do those things, and hopefully we'll be pretty successful at it. The Eagles have had plenty of success at the 6-man level, reaching the postseason every year since 2010 and winning more than 100 games during that span. Sterling City won the 1A Division I state championship in 2020 and made a run last year before getting knocked out by eventual champion Westbrook 44-41 in the state quarterfinals. That's probably the hardest part of the transition, said Sisko, who made the move to 6-man with the Eagles in 2008. going from being one of the top five teams in the state every year for the past several years, and then going somewhere we don't know where we're going to fit. We're not going to be that top five team that we probably would have been if we stayed six man. However, Sterling City will have some advantages in making the move up. Cisco played and got his start in coaching at the 11-man level, and offensive coordinator Josh Marler has 14 years of experience coaching it. As a coach, I've done both, Cisco said. I love six-man, but going back to 11-man, it's a good change. Not saying I wouldn't have enjoyed staying six-man, but the biggest thing is the kids' perception of where we're going to be and how good we're going to be. But we still have good athletes. The Eagles return a lot of speed from last year's team, which produced more than 4,500 yards of offense and averaged 57 points per game. Defensively, Sterling City outscored opponents by an average of 30 points per game and limited them to 3,012 total yards for the season. Tristan Himes, Johnny Monreal, River Kinsey, and Aiden Calderon will be some players to watch as the Eagles make the transition. Cisco is also excited about Ty and Seth Turner, who moved in last year, as well as promising newcomers Santiago Beltran, Riley Barnes, Daniel Velez, and Cameron Alexander. Offensively, we're going to want to get to that edge and get outside of people and use that speed to our advantage, said Cisco, who along with Marler planned to use some flex bone elements. I think it plays to our advantage because a lot of people don't see it much anymore, and I think that's why Wall has had some success with it. When you get good at something and you're disciplined, like Navy, Air Force, Army, and those type teams, they can play those bigger schools because they are so disciplined. The hard part is getting good at it real quick. Cisco says the offensive line is a point of emphasis for the Eagles since it is played so differently from the six-man game. Defensively, we're going to try to use our speed to get to the ball quickly. We should be pretty good tacklers coming from six-man to 11-man. We should be able to get several people to the ball pretty quick, Cisco said. While football is still football, Sterling City will have to shift its focus a little heading back into the 11-man game. Your expectations change a little, said Cisco. Our goal has been winning state championships, playing for them, getting there, trying to win them. Now our focus changed a little bit. Make the playoffs, win some playoff games, and who knows what happens after that. Mason Punchers to Hang Their Hat on Defense in 2022 Football Season by Mike Whitson. Special to the Standard Times, published August 8th. There is a running tally each season in the Mason High School football coach's office of how many games, program-wide, the punters have kept their opponents from scoring. Last year's total was 15, led by the 7th grade team, which posted 6 shutouts in 8 games. The goal is to keep 0 points on that scoreboard, said head football coach Michael McLeod, who was a safety for the punchers and also played at Angelo State. Defense is my passion. The kids see the passion I have for it, and they share it with me. We do a great job as a staff and a program of hyping up the things that it takes to be a successful defense, creating turnovers, reducing missed tackles, keeping a shutout. The biggest thing is shutouts. The stingy puncher defense yielded an average of just 11.7 points per game last season, finishing 9-2 overall, including a 5-0 romp to a 12th straight district title, in which Mason allowed 50 points total with 2 shutouts. The punchers returned 5 starters on the defensive side of the ball, including defensive backs Ryan Todd, Ivan Wolford, and Isaiah Bishop. Kaysen Jacoby and Faustino Montalano are back on the line. Tino and Jacoby, I expect to hold down the front and let those linebackers scrape and make plays, said McLeod. And then Todd and Bishop in the back, I expect them to be picking balls left and right, putting themselves in position to make plays. Offensively, Mason brings back 5 starters, highlighted by the skill positions. The punchers scored an average of 46.4 points per game in 2021, blowing out 7 opponents by 3 scores or more. I think our strength is our skill kids, said McLeod. We return our quarterback, Wofford, and our running back, Todd, a big receiver in Brody Comey. Returning some of those skill guys that were able to get on the field last year and get that experience and gain confidence is a huge thing, and it does help set us up to be successful. Todd, the preseason offensive MVP for District 14-2A Division 1, was the MVP last season as a sophomore, rushing for 928 yards and 14 touchdowns. Wofford threw for 833 yards, 10 touchdowns, and rushed for 6 more scores while directing the punchers' wing T assault. It's a mentality, said McLeod. If there's one word we want our kids to embody, it's toughness. In the wing T, you've got to be tough. That kind of toughness, that mentality, that's what we try to ingrain in these kids. It's the how to what we do, and it starts with our fatties, the offensive line. They lay the groundwork. The punchers' offensive line, affectionately dubbed the Fat Boys, will have to replace the district co-offensive lineman of the year in Milla Mayfield, 21 pancakes, 1 sack allowed, and Will Entz, 22 pancakes, no sacks allowed. Another all-district lineman, Rogelio Huertan, moved away. Jacoby and Montalano will look to welcome some new Fat Boys up front and keep the offense rolling. It's the next guy up, said McLeod. That's the mentality we have and the expectations we have. I have the confidence that guys will step up, and they will. McLeod is also confident in his staff, including offensive coordinator Kobe Owen, entering his 10th year at Mason, to have the O-line ready. He's laid a deep-rooted foundation and standards for our Fat Boys, and man, they know exactly what he expects, and his mentality bleeds right into them, said McLeod. The punchers open up the season with a non-district gauntlet, assured to have them battle-tested by the time district play rolls around. Mason, ranked number 13 in Class 2A Division 1 by Texas Football, open with number 9-ranked Coleman, play number 17 Cristoval, number 18 Wall, 3A Division 2, and other 3As, Brady and Ballinger. The punchers' District 14 2A foes include Junction, Harper, Johnson City, and Stockdale, which dropped down from 3A and is a 3-hour bus ride on the other side of San Antonio. McLeod says playing better in bigger teams is the only way to get better. Assuming we come out of non-district healthy, it really sets us up for success, he said. We've got the talent coming back. We've got the culture and the tradition. I think it's really going to come down to our leadership if we're going to be successful and reach our goals. Number 10, Erien County, looks for first playoff win since 1971 and more. By Amy McDaniel, published August 6th, Mertzen. Some might see only the big three when looking at Erien County High School's football program. The reason the number 10-ranked Hornets believe their time is now is because of the Big 8 in the senior class and the Big 30 on the high school roster. For a school with an enrollment of 89, it's probably Erien County's depth and experience that has made observers take notice of a program that has not won a playoff game since 1971. We definitely have some depth, which is what we were missing last year, said senior quarterback Trevin Coffle, who has earned all-state honors in football and basketball, in addition to qualifying for the state track meet 2 times. Now we have 10 or 11 players that could come into the game at all times versus 6 or 7 that you're comfortable with. We've got the team to do it this year. It's our season. Coffle, 6'3", 180 pounds, will be joined on the field by 2 other all-state-level athletes. Bo Morrow, 6'4", 180, was a first-team all-state wide receiver, in addition to earning all-region honors in basketball. Jordan Harrison, 6'1", 155, earned all-region honors in football before being named first-team all-state in basketball and finishing 6th at the state track meet in the triple jump. This season is probably our most motivated, said Morrow. I don't even think it's that it's our senior year. It's that we have our best shot this year. Both Morrow and Coffle are preseason All-State picks by Texas Football Magazine. head football coach Don Coughle, father of Trevin and winner of 106 games in his 19-year career, said it's remarkable to have three special athletes in one grade at the Class 1A level. But it extends past those three, the coach said. We've got eight seniors, and they're all spectacular young men. Not just football players, but spectacular young men with great leadership abilities. Coughle said his seniors have eaten breakfast together before two-a-day workouts, followed by lunch, and he believes that camaraderie will go a long way for the Hornets. They actually enjoy being around each other, and that does not happen everywhere, he said. Coughle was hired to build the six-man program after more than four decades in 11-man ball for Erie County. Since arriving on campus, the coach has compiled a 24-8 record and led the Hornets to two second-place finishes in district play. But each of the past two seasons has ended in a first-round playoff loss to none other than May, the preseason number three team in the state and participant in the last two state title games. Not only are the Hornets aligned in a district that will meet May's district again in the first round, but it's not just May. There's also preseason number four, Jonesboro. Give us May again, said Harrison, who along with Coughle and Murrow helped Erie County reach the UIL state basketball tournament last season for the first time since 1961. It was the Hornets' best season ever on the hard court. After a strong spring on the track, the Hornets are at their most confident. We're licking our chops to hopefully play the May Tigers again, the quarterback said. That's our goal, to win district, and hopefully play them again in the first round. Now we know we can do it, and just getting through games one by one and making it as far as we can go, said Morrow, who caught 33 passes for 944 yards and 21 TDs last year. And I think we can go pretty far. At cornerback, Morrow had 41 tackles, 4 fumble recoveries, and 4 interceptions. Coughle passed for 1,729 yards and 35 TDs last year with just 3 interceptions. He also rushed for 495 yards and 10 TDs, as well as hit 45 of 57 pat kicks and 9 pat passes. At linebacker, he has had 128 tackles and forced 7 fumbles. Harrison rarely comes off the field. At his running back position, he had 938 yards and 16 TDs, but also caught 13 passes for 365 and 9 TDs and threw 2 TD passes. He returned 10 kicks for 359 yards and 6 TDs. At defensive line, Harrison has 109 tackles, 9 fumble recoveries, 1 interception, and 3 defensive TDs. The three are joined by seniors Cameron Feller, 6'4", 225, and Brendan Akingbolagan, 6'2", 220, both all-district linemen last year. The senior class is filled out by Lee Collins, Fred Mayberry, and Schrader Seahorn. Top underclassmen will be sophomore running back linebacker Parker Posey, 5'10", 195, who was an All-West Texas selection last year after being named District Newcomer of the Year, and Wyatt Morris, a newcomer to the varsity as a junior. While the coach said playoff experience, at least in football, is a weakness for the Hornets, it's tempered with basketball playoff experience and an experienced coaching staff. We have three coaches, defensive coordinator Sean Harrison, head boys basketball coach John Murrow, and head boys track coach Derek Schoen on the football staff that could all be a head coach somewhere, have been head coaches somewhere, and our athletic director, Jacob Connor. He isn't listed on the staff, but he's a huge help, and we can always bounce things off him. He's got a great mind for football. The coach is also not worried about the high expectations and how it will affect his players. Squeaking into the top 10 has created some excitement, but the kids have done a good job of keeping it level, Coughle said. They want to prove they're better than number 10. I tell them in the end, if you win the last game of the season or you lose, you've got to be able to look in the mirror and say, I did something I could do. I had my brother's back and we worked together and it just wasn't our turn. The kids understand that and their maturity level is growing every day. It's by far the best since I've been here.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.